Yes, without love, where would we be? At the bottom of the sea. It takes, you know, a whole slew of people to make these events happen. We keep them secret, however. Such pearls are hard to find. We will not reveal them until the last lecture. But it takes 12 or 15 people working around the clock. I mean, enormous amount of energy and work to bring together the communications from so many people, to try to put what we say into a form available to others, and distribute them around the world. And it's a great deal of work and energy. And as I say, I'm going to keep them secret until the last session. I wanted to say a few things about kinesiology itself. Not to get carried away with it, you know. Kinesiology is just a tool. It's a useful thing. And a lot of times we use it more for curiosity than for, you know, anything really genuine. You know, people ask about other realms and all. I mean, it's got nothing to do with your enlightenment. You know what I mean? It's just spiritual wandering, you know? And so you stick to your own straightforwardness. All that you know has already been spoken and revealed. It hasn't changed since. It hasn't changed for thousands of years. That which was said today, that which Krishna taught, they're all the same. Because anybody who has ever experienced the truth, it always comes back forth exactly the same. Because there is only one truth, and unembellished by thinking this, yeah, the experience is always the same. It manifests itself in the same way. It speaks in the same way. And one can tell at a glance at a sentence or two of a book written by somebody whether they've experienced it or not. It's just in the energy of the sentence itself. It's a way of being with it. There's a conviction that comes only from the validity of the experience itself. So the ultimate truth is the ultimate beyond even experiencing. We said that there's thinkingness, there's that which witnesses the thinkingness, there's what that which experiences the witnessing of the thinkingness until finally one gets to the substrate, which is consciousness itself. And then, if karmically destined, one goes even beyond consciousness itself. Out of that which you are arises consciousness. So the truth, the absolute ultimate truth of that which you are is beyond even consciousness itself. So there's no point to getting wrapped up in kinesiology and making it a new obsessive compulsive device to avoid reaching enlightenment. You don't have to calibrate everything on the planet. It is fun, however, and of course we did it already. We did thousands. And we routinely do 1,000 or two a year, just routinely, just walking through the house, various things arise. Partly because we get such an enormous amount of communication from all over, you know, all different countries around the clock, you know, all different propositions, questions, would you go here, do this, etc. So the difficulty with physicality is that you're limited to the temporality of here and now, you see. with the physical self. Therefore, I never liked the physical self much because it's an impediment. It's always in the way. When you want to go someplace or do something, you got to drag this around, and that can take hours and days, and it's a drag. So I just wanted to say, don't make kinesiology itself an obsession or a compulsion. That which is necessary to know has already been spoken, has already been shared, has already been taught. It's the same throughout all of time. Anything that varies from that which has been taught throughout time is a variance from the truth. The truth is always the same. There's no variation from the truth. So there's fancy side trips off into other domains, and the lure, the siren song of specialness coming from various dimensions. These are all lures to pull you off the straight and narrow. All lures to pull you off the straight and narrow and test the conviction of your convictions. Don't allow yourself to be pulled off the central path. So not all questions can be answered. Not all questions are necessary to answer. And many questions, what you do is you pose them as a meditation, and you simply surrender them to God. You see, because otherwise the ego just uses it as another way of maintaining its dominance over your consciousness. Like, I have to know if I had past lives or not. You don't have to know that. I mean, what has that got to do with totally surrendering to God, you know? It's helpful. So a lot of these things that we've mentioned are helpful to know at various places. And it's a subtlety of spiritual discernment to know when a thing is a distraction or it's really significant and worthy of looking at. Almost all things resolve themselves by simply asking and then waiting. To simply ask, what is the answer to this? What is the meaning of that? Does this pertain to me? Then the answer presents itself in due time. You see, we look at, we said the question here, now we waited 3 minutes and we ain't got an answer yet. I mean, I'm waiting for the phone to ring, God. Yeah. When we ask a question, we mean like right now, you know what I'm saying? Just know that it's heard, and when the time is appropriate, see, because spiritual work is really extremely subtle. The slightest move of energy like this reveals an entire field like that illuminates this entire landscape. You know? It's not a linear, what is the answer to this question? And if I get the answer, then I'm going to move from here to there. It's more a way of being in the world. It's more of a contemplative way of being in the world. It's more a way of relating to the context of life and of your life and of all of life and of human life. It's more a way of relating to context than it is focusing on content. The content comes forth in due time. So the way to get an answer is to pose the question, meditate on it, turn it over to God, and ask God to help you understand, ask the Holy Spirit. You can pester the Holy Spirit, who doesn't seem to mind at all. Why doesn't my ignition turn on? It's not turning on. The Holy Spirit is very helpful about such things. Seems to have a whole bunch of experts on the other side, electricians, mechanics, all kinds of people, map readers. I found that, very helpful. So it doesn't have to be airy-fairy and sound very grandiose and very splendid in order to ask God a question. Because the simplest things may be quite distressing, and you have to surrender your distress to God and ask for help with it. We wanted to answer a few more questions, and what else were we going to say today? I just wanted to explain about the correspondence, about the kinesiology. The other thing about kinesiology, because we get a lot of correspondence about that, I wish I had never written about it. I'm like Galileo, and he keeps getting letters about telescopes. He doesn't know anything about telescopes, you know. Friend has said, you put this glass here, you put this glass, you look through here, and he says, wow, man, there's stars out there. I mean, they keep writing me about telescopes. I don't know. There's experts that do kinesiology all day, every day, and it's their whole thing. And we try to send out a list of people we know have demonstration tapes and explanations of it at all. It's just a simple way of discerning the truth or falsehood of a single statement. And it's nothing more than that. It's an assist. It's useful. Its primary use is really in doing research, the kind of research we did that went into power versus force, et cetera. There it serves a very useful research purpose. And in getting answers to the unanswerable, because they're outside of the linear domain. So it's useful in exploring the realities, the non-linear domain. If you're going to explore the linear domain, it's better to get a computer. What is the conscious level of people in Iraq and Saddam? I think we already did them. I think they're around 70 or 90. They're not very good. Oh, Saddam Hussein, no, we never did him. Do we have permission to do Saddam Hussein? He's over 200, resist. He's not over 200. I don't like to say how low people are. I mean, if you're either over 200 or you're under 200, you're either committed to integrity and truth, or you're into grandiosity, megalomania, and really a hatred for people. Can you imagine a person who defends himself by surrounding his military compound with children? Huh? So if you bomb his military compound, you know he's got you right in the gut, right in the spleen, right into the old guilt complex that you got to kill children. A man who hides behind children, I don't know, I can't say much of him. I'll tell you what my macho man thinks of him, but that wouldn't be good for recording. Few rounds in the gun tub and I'd straighten out his understanding of things. I tell you, when I was in the Navy, you know, I got put on hazardous duty and I go aboard this minesweeper and here's these grizzled old guys that have been out to sea with tattoos and rings in their ears and parrots on their shoulder. I mean, you know. And so the first guy, this guy says to me, hey, Shorty, that was my name ever after. Shorty says, you box? And I said, well, I took lessons from Richie Mitchell. He says, what weight were you? I says, I was mosquito weight. Yeah, he says, well, how about going a few rounds as a spar partner in the gun tub? I says, okay. So we put on these big mitts. I almost fell over with them. And we go up in the gun tub. We sparred off, and he knocked me cold with one shot. I told you that story before. Did I? Then I told, find out later he was the champion of the Third Fleet. Yeah. And we're still friends to this day. You know, he writes me, and he's getting on now. He's not all there, as his wife tells me. He quit drinking too late, anyway. Is it within God's wish for you to teach us all muscle testing today? That's hysterical. But make it brief, he said. Okay. We do recapitulate this because no matter how many tapes, videos, and lectures we give, for some reason, some people are up against it with muscle testing. The reason they have a problem with it is because it's so simple. I find the things that are simple are very difficult to explain. If you say, just put it here, nobody gets that. All right, where should I put this? Just put it here. Well, what do you mean by here, when, now? I mean, this way, that. I mean, Christ, they got to complicate everything. Just put it here, man. Just. Is it God's will that for... We know that God's will doesn't have its specifics, like whether I should teach it or not. It's ridiculous. Anyway, it's my will to teach it. All right, I did want to go over just people are getting calibrations that are too high by virtue of the fact that they resist. It's a very fast, subtle energy. Okay, it's a very fast, subtle energy, resist. You see, it's very quick. So when I hold something negative in mind, it shoots down that fast. That's when you go weak. Then the primate within us, the old primate out of evolution, thinks it's falling out of a tree, and its anti-gravity muscles resist. See? So what we've noticed this all around the world. The minute the person goes weak, I say, hold Bin Laden in mind. They start to go weak, and what happens then is they resist. You can't resist. It's very, very fast. So what you do is you surrender. So it's partly a willingness to surrender to weakness, which sets the monkey in your unconscious into frantic that he's going to fall out of the tree. So you've got to retrain the monkey that he's okay to fall out of the tree. Most people overly resist. Therefore, they get calibrations that are way too high. Resist. Okay. All right. So the thing is, you have to let go instantly. It's a subtlety. Anybody can totally resist, and you would never get a no, because no matter how hard you push, I can push harder, you understand? So it's not a test of strength. It's a test, it's a fast test like that, instantaneous test. I'm holding something in mind, resist. I'm holding something in mind, resist. All right. First time was Jesus Christ, the second time was Bin Laden. You see how fast it went? Now, the other question that comes up is, doesn't the other person's belief system affect the result? No, because she doesn't know what I was thinking. She has no belief system. She has no belief system about what I'm thinking because she doesn't know what I'm thinking. I was holding.
I thought it was because I was blonde. <She's>...
It's funny, a funny joke. She just made up a blonde joke. She said, I thought it was because I was blonde. Okay, so the answer is very, very rapid. Consciousness instantly detects that which is deleterious to it and instantly detects that which is friendly to it. Extremely rapid, probably a tenth of a second. Let's see how fast it is. I never did measure it, come to think of it. We have permission to measure this right here and now. This discharge is longer than a hundredth of a second. It's longer than a 1,000th of a second. It's 1/10,000th of a second, approximately 1/10,000th of a second. So it's something you get just by practice. It's more like when you walk into a room, you've already got the energy of all that, you've already got the energy of that room and the context of that room. It's very fast, very quick. With practice, you get it. People who practice by themselves, like this, are the most prone to get high calibrations. Because again, you have to develop the sensitivity, and it's probably better to use these two fingers than the ring than these two fingers. These are very strong. If I make up my mind, it's going to be practically impossible to pull them apart, you understand? So the tendency is to resist and get calibrations that are way too high. These two fingers here do not have that much strength. And therefore, to use these two fingers here, the relative strength between truth and falsehood is much more easily perceived this way. As you notice, trying to keep these two fingers apart, you really don't have much strength. If you try to keep these two fingers, now if I try to part them, you'll notice they're quite weak. I can't really part them because they're very, very weak. So using these two muscles, these two fingers here, is quicker and more sensitive because they're much weaker. And I can overpower them any time, you see, because they don't have that much strength. So you're not as likely to get a false positive. Most things that are necessary to know, you know, we have already been discussed and demonstrated. We are working on a book where we're doing 1,000 calibrations. And as soon as we finish the book I, which Sonia just finished the last manuscript, the next one we're halfway, I've got halfway through. So I'm trying to make a reference book because lots of people have many questions and they can't really do it themselves, or they don't have a partner that can do it with themselves. And it'd be just, you know, sort of easy to be able to look up, you know, very spiritual authors in history, you know, what level of consciousness. You see, and the levels of consciousness is not better than, you see, the ego tends to think of better than or less than or, no, it's what level of truth are they talking about? There are many terrific teachers in the high 200s. I mean, the basics of spirituality, you don't have to be a rocket scientist. To be kind, loving, forgiving, unselfish, to be of service to others, to see the value of worship and prayer and dedication, of surrendering all one's service and efforts to God, to stop looking for rewards from the world and do them for their own sake out of one's love for God and one's fellow man. Those things are very simple and also very difficult. Very difficult, as we all know. And it takes years of practice before one goes on and needs more advanced spiritual techniques. The desire for, as we said, salvation is one thing, enlightenment is another. Enlightenment is far more demanding, more strict, more radical. Radical. You got to be actually willing to get riddled with bullets. That's what it takes to walk beyond identifying yourself as a physical body, and giving in and giving power to fear. So it's extremely radical. To reach enlightenment is extremely demanding, and you can be asked to give up anything, and you have to be willing to surrender anything and everything. When I said, if that music puts you in that very unique divine space, then I would just stay in that space. I would never do anything but play the music, month after month after month after month, year after year, till finally one's willing to do it forever. Instantly, you're into that forever. So, those which are great gains sometimes require great commitments and great sacrifices. So when one reaches a certain stage, you like know it, like one is almost compelled to leave everything, devote oneself to a very intense spirituality. And that's the call, and you say yes to it, and then you go for it. And you make what I call the run. You make the final run, where nothing stops you, nothing gets in your way. You sacrifice and surrender anything and everything that stands in the way. The willingness to leave the world and everything in it. The titles, the riches, the family members, whatever it takes, you walk out, walk away. Whatever you have to do, you have to do. So those are the things that come up later, not this morning. You don't have to leave your car and take the bus today, no. The collective consciousness, what is the effect of the terrorist attacks? I think the effect of the terrorist attacks is actually to elevate consciousness. I think that following that, we all became more spiritual, more committed to integrity, more to questioning. Look at the agonizing we go over, the moral agonizing about what should be the response to it. What does it mean to be patriotic? Should we have in God we trust on our money? I always think that's so funny. It's on money, right? In God we trust on a dollar bill. I mean, there's God in money, you know? Which is more important? It's hard to say. Huh? Should we take God off of the money? So the question of should we even allow God to be a legitimate expression of, what is the difference between being nationalistic and What should one's relationship to one's country be, and to what degree, and in what context? So I think there's a great deal of benefit to the country. There's a real live awakening to the reality of spiritual and theological questions. And unfortunately, those who do the voting and talking most of the time don't know the difference between religion and spirituality. That's the difficulty. Their difficulty is they don't understand the Constitution. To get elected to the Congress, you don't have to understand the Constitution. I myself would make them all pass a test of whether they understand the Constitution of the United States before they swear to uphold it. Uphold what, idiot? You don't know the difference between religion and spirituality. The Constitution of the United States calibrates in the 700s. It says, by virtue of the divinity of our origin, that is the source of our equality. And out of that equality, then, we acknowledge God as our source. And out of acknowledging our God as his source, therefore we establish no religion. It's because of the powerful truth of spirituality that the state shall establish no religion. And in enforcing the spiritual truth, then, it guarantees the freedom of religion, because the government shall neither prohibit nor establish a religion. In other words, the government, because its source is spiritual truth, keeps its hand off all religions, neither. So the word God is merely a word, and to say, to reiterate, the source of the power of the Constitution does not establish religion. So the objection to it was, first of all, it does not say in it that so the political opposition to it was confusing, government shall not establish a religion. See, but to mention the word God as the source of man's origin is not a religion. That is not a religion. So one is free to talk about Satan in colleges. Is it college? You just establish the Satan Club. Would you believe a Satan Club? Goes with a lot of the music that we hear in the MTV and all. Guess that's the music that goes with the Satan Club. So it's an odd paradox that it's okay to establish a Satan Club, but it is not okay to mention God. So that's a peculiar perversion of truth, which is based on a luciferic energy. The luciferic likes to turn things into their opposites, so that you become the defender of evil in the name of truth. When Bin Laden's last days arise, you can be sure they'll all be out there with the placards, Bin Laden's rights are being violated. Forget the 3,000 people and their families and all the rest of us sitting around in the... All right, so that confusion of truth, then, the luciferic energy tries to reverse good and evil and make them look like they're opposites. So I think the country is looking at that, is confronted with what is religion, what is spirituality, what is integrity, what is truth, what is our commitment, what's the difference between nationalism and patriotism? People don't even get that. They discuss it and they don't even know the difference, because nationalism is bad. Therefore, we should not be patriotic. That's confusing two things altogether. They're two different domains. Patriotism comes from the heart. Nationalism is a political control technique, They're not the same thing. So there's big mistakes made just due to ignorance of not knowing the difference between religion and spirituality, not knowing the difference between patriotism and nationalism. In Nazi Germany, we see the apex of nationalism, Deutschland über alles, and its appeal. So you can see how people would later mistrust that. Patriotism is love for one's country, love for one's country. When you love your country, it doesn't have to dominate anybody else. You know, we don't see America invading Canada, invading Mexico, taking over the Caribbean. You see what I'm saying? It's sufficient unto itself to love one's country, is to love one's fellow man. Mm-hmm. As far as walk-ins and soul exchangers, that's an illusion. That's an illusion. That's some kind of a pop spirituality concept, that there's walk-ins, and then there were people with their tailbones missing, and they were they're all looking for specialness. It's all looking for a specialness. Looking for a specialist. Specialist. To be special. One doesn't need to be special. You see, when you surrender all to God, humility means there's no need to be special. There's no need for recognition. There's no need for titles, possessions, control. One doesn't want followers, money. Don't have to have membership. People don't have to sign up. You don't have to be a member of the club. You don't have to go through initiation. We don't put a rattlesnake in your mailbox if you decide to leave. No, spirituality means freedom. To be where you want to be for the benefit of being there. Mm-hmm. Because the karmic merit is your own decision to be there for its own sake. If you're going to church because you'll go to hell if you don't go to church, what is the karmic merit in that? Spiritual growth comes from saying yes to that which is positive, seeking that which you feel beneficial, and not avoiding the negative, but choosing the positive. So the way out of the duality of good and evil and good and bad is to choose the good, choose the positive. There's no point in battling evil, and because you then just give it some kind of reality and energy of reality. No, what you do is you choose. The way out of that one is you merely choose the good, you might say. Huh? Choose truth over falsehood. It's true that with kinesiology and with karmic research, you can discover the source of a lot of things. Now, there are a lot of people that write books on past life research. I don't know all their names, but there are specialists in it, and there are various techniques. There's simple hypnotic techniques where you count back and you go to a certain time, and you come up the elevator and you step out, and then the whole panorama begins to present itself. And with that, there's often a recognition. A lot of times you suddenly remember. If it's valid, you'll remember it. It's not just a recall in sort of a trance state. You frankly remember it. And you remember the circumstances. Sometimes you wish you didn't. You remember the circumstances, right? And that may start a train of them in which you can remember quite a few lifetimes. You know, you can, without much difficulty, remember really quite a few lifetimes. Uh-huh. And then at a certain level of consciousness, because you don't identify with this physicality, you identify more with the evolution of consciousness back through time, and then there's the recall and awareness of all kinds of lifetimes. And usually with an awareness of what the purpose of that encounter was. Can you find out spiritual truths for a third person? Yes, you can do that. And a lot of times, we do it once in a while. On behalf of someone else at their request, because they don't have a partner to do it, and etc. And they'll say, could you ask this or that for me? So there you have to get karmic permission. You have to get their permission, then you also have to ask. Because sometimes it's merely a way the person's bypassing facing a spiritual task that they've got to handle with themselves, you know. So sometimes kinesiology can be used more to escape spiritual responsibility rather than actually advance your own consciousness. Well, this is a good one. Now that we know causality, Now that we know causality, now that we don't know causality, what does it mean when you think you are making progress in your spiritual work, and all of a sudden it all goes down the drain? Sudden severe storm, everything is in chaos, and all the garbage of your life comes out. Oh, it means you're making fantastic progress. When you're BSing around in your head and thinking you're doing spirituality, nothing really much happens. When you get serious about it, all kinds of stuff can come out of the woodwork. And that's quite true. So the lives of spiritual seekers is often quite turbulent, because it tends to bring up the calibration of various spiritual teachers is somewhat difficult to explain. Many people, spiritual teachers and otherwise, calibrate quite high, do good, very good work in the world, attain recognition, power, financial gain, et cetera, et cetera. Elected president of their country. And then they crash. Then it goes to their head, you might say. The luciferic energy of power, money, control. So we see a lot of people, not just gurus, who write their, let's say, there's gurus that write books that are in the, they're usually in the high 500s. They gain a lot of followers. Then somehow the ego gets pulled into it, and they succumb to the glamour of all that. And then you see that suddenly their calibration goes way down. The book they wrote in the 500s may still be in the 500s. They, as a person, as an entity right now, may calibrate quite low. It happened with Napoleon. It happened with Hitler. Let's just do. I mean, so it's not just gurus. We have permission to do Napoleon. Napoleon on his rise was over 450, 460, 470, 480. He was a brilliant man. Yeah, he calibrates at 480. That's very high intelligence. He was probably a very brilliant military strategist. And Napoleon, okay. Later, before he died, Napoleon calibrated over 200 resist. Yeah. See, Napoleon was 480, that's really way up there. And then, somehow, being emperor, being commander, maybe the accumulated karma of killing many innocent people. Oh, that could be it. I don't want to know that. Anyway, so it can happen. I think Adolf Hitler, we have permission to ask about Adolf Hitler. When he wrote Mein Kampf was over 400, 450, 440, 445. So Hitler was a politician. He stood for, what was it, National Socialism or something? And he wrote his political treatise in prison. And after the push failed, he was over 450 at the time. Before he died, Adolf Hitler was over 200. He says, I don't want to tell you how low he was, but so you see, it's not just gurus, but the most startling, I have permission to share this with this group now, resist, to share the most startling example, resist. I have permission to share the one I'm holding in mind, resist. Okay. There's far more dramatic examples. All right. You get a no sometimes. The no can be because of the setting, because of the way the question's asked, because of your intention. So we'll have to research out later why we got the no. We don't have time now. Sometimes you get it because in an audience, and a certain percentage of the audience may get upset by the answer or something like this. So anyhow, it can happen to anyone. A person like that will retain the image of what they were when they were in their higher state. And people relate to that image. Even at the end of the war, I'm sure there were a lot of people that believed in Hitler. They believed in him still, even though he led the country down to disaster and destruction and the destruction of the Cologne. I mean, the beautiful cities, Dresden, the incredible beauty that was destroyed in the name of war. That in itself must have a bad karmic consequence to destroy so much beauty. But I'm sure there were still people that believed in them. So the image may outlast the reality. The image outlasts the reality. What the person was is still being glorified or respected. And they don't see what the person is now. They only see what the person was at their highest level of functioning. So it happens even to military commanders, and it happens to politicians all the time. And celebrities, of course, it happens to celebrities once they get in the eye of the popularity and all the paparazzi are after them, etc. It's very hard for them not to crash. I feel sorry for them. And of course, many great rock stars and all, we saw them start out humbly and full of joy and then end up crashing and committing suicide and dying of drugs, etc. So to take that onslaught of popularity and the media, the spotlight of the media, money, prestige, followers, can imagine putting on a concert and having, what do they have, like 10,000 people out there, 30,000 or something? It must be staggering for their ego to handle that and not become grandiose and sucked in by the glamour of it. So one of the great seducers then is glamour. One of the great seducers is glamour, is just the glamour of success, the glamour of prestige. Oh yeah, so it isn't just the prestige and the power, it's the glamour of it. There was, I think, a book written by about glamour as a specific energy, written by a member of the White Brotherhood, channeled on from
Alice Bailey,
right. Yes, I always thought the book on glamour was probably the best of all of them. That it is a very specific energy. Glamour, we have permission to ask that, is a specific energy. Resist. Well, yeah, it is a specific energy. So that's an interesting thing to know, that certain accomplishments then will attract that energy of glamour, which itself could lead to your downfall. You become captured by that. So one becomes captured by the energy of glamour, seduced by it, resist, captivated by it, and enslaved by it. One becomes enslaved by it. So that would explain then the fall of many, the glamour. All right, so I hope we've answered most of the questions. Is there any more that we want to answer before we go? We're going to quit a little early tonight because I still want to say, I want to sign books and greet people and shake hands and all. And today we're going to escape a little early, but not too early. Any other questions you really need asked?
Gratitude,
yes. Gratitude is one of the most wonderful things and helpful spiritually. Gratitude is over 500 resist, 510, 520, 530, 520, 530. Yeah, it's just the way of the heart. Gratitude is a way of the heart, thankfulness and gratitude. And it's very important in many spiritual pathways. It's certainly in the 12-step programs, it's a very, very big piece of the program. Instead of resentments, to be grateful for what you have instead of resentful about what you don't have, because the way of the heart then. So the 12-step groups are a way of the heart, the way of surrendering. And through the third step, one surrenders one will to God and is grateful for all experiences, because as someone said to me the other day, you get the experiences that you need. You can't get from here to there without going through here, you understand? So that would explain why the world appears as it does, because it requires to grow spiritually many opportunities which this world provides. This world In other words, if you were in a beautiful monastery where everybody is unconditionally loving and you knew nothing but listen to birds and garden all day, there's a limited amount of karmic possibilities there, correct? Give up sex, maybe, okay. 75 years in a monastery, and out of that lifetime you learn to let sex go, you know. I could be happy without sex, okay. If you can do that one in one lifetime, that's pretty good. Now, in the world which most of us live, the opportunities are complex, multitudinous, and constantly presenting themselves. So if you want to evolve rapidly, it seems to me this world would be the ideal place. This is a wonderful place. All you have to do is turn on the TV, you got an opportunity to let go of hate, let go of fear, let go of greed, let go of lust, avarice, as they shake on the screen and invite you to try this, which will turn you into more of a man and know your money back. And I mean the seductions and the presentations and the latest person to hate and the latest person to fear, the latest political shenanigan to twist your mind with, the appeal to all the vanities, to appearance, to glamour, is just an endless barrage. So if you have to pick a world for rapid spiritual evolution, I think this is the ultimate. That's true. This is almost the ultimate opportunity, resist. And that's why it is a gift to be born a human, which is what the Buddha meant, resist. Aha. So the Buddha was right to say it's a great gift to be born a human. And the chance, that because it opens the chance to evolve all the way to enlightenment just in one lifetime. So we're grateful to be here. We're grateful to be here, O Lord. We give thanks for this world and the multitudinous opportunities it presents. And prayerfully, we are grateful and thankful for this lifetime. We are. I love you all so much. This. They went up over 8 points, 9 points, 10 points, 11 points. Ooh, 11 points today.
Yeah.
They went over 11 points, 12 points. Okay. Some people went over 50 points. Resist. Yeah. The average, the group as an average, went up 11 points. Some people went 50 to 100. You know, individually. Some went over 100 points, 150. Some people went over 100 points just during the course of the lecture. So it's like if you're poised on the edge of something, wham, you just shoot ahead, you know, because you were just poised for that. But the average of all is 11. When you consider that 5 points in a lifetime is the average to do 11 in an afternoon, plus free lunch. Hooray for us, we're wonderful, we're great. That's to put the dark forces on guard. Bop, bop, bop.
Thank you.
I guess that'll show them.